This is a Dragon Blazer production, and I am the little boogeyman. All right.
Coming down the aisle, it's the podcast tag team champions of the world, the Rage and Blaze Show. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Rage and Blaze Show. I'm Rage.
And I'm Blaze.
And today we're going back in time to 1994 to finish off our WrestleMania 10 coverage. And so far the show's been pretty good. I can't wait to see what we have to finish off the show. I know we've got two WWF Championship matches yet to come. We have a tag team title match yet to come. I'm not sure if the Intercontinental title is being defended. Oh, well, duh. Yeah. Ladder match yet to come. Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon to unify the Intercontinental Championship match. So we do have some good stuff coming up. And I'm actually surprised they haven't already done the first title match between Yokozuna and Lex Luger.
I have a feeling they're doing that at the end, and then...
Well, then they're just going to wrestle back-to-back matches? I mean...
That's what I'm thinking is going
to
happen.
Bret Hart got to open the show, and these other guys, they're going to have to wrestle and then wrestle sooner. So I was a little shocked at the scheduling. I actually thought we would have got that match done in our first part of the podcast. But unfortunately, that's not how it worked out. It is what it is. But before we get into that, since we are in a new year of 1994, we have new video games to talk about. So the video game we are going to talk about today, released in November of 1994, WCW Super Brawl Wrestling. So I personally have never played this game. We watched videos. We did some research. I've never seen that. This is just one of them games I never played when I had a Super Nintendo. As a matter of fact, this is the only WCW game released for Super Nintendo. At first glance, the game looks really cool. It actually looks better than most of the WWF games we have talked about on our podcast. It has top WCW superstars, Barry Windham, Flying Brian Pillman, The Natural Dustin Rhodes, Johnny B. Bad, Nature Boy Ric Flair, Rick Rude, Rick Steiner, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, so, you know, go through the whole list of Rickies here. we got a video game with four Rickies.
Oh, jeez.
Dear Lord.
You were a popular name.
I'm a popular name back in the early 90s, I guess. So, All-American Ron Simmons, Scott Steiner, Sting, and Vader. Those are the players you can play as. The game takes place with the ring like a three-quarter overhead perspective. It's a little bit different than what we are used to with the WWF games. So obviously they were trying to do something to stick out a little bit. Every wrestler has the same move set. They can do backbreaker, tombstone pile driver, atomic drop, various diving attacks, and a variety of kicks, punches, elbows, and forearm shots. And then, of course, everybody has their signature move that they do, you know, like the Scorpion Deathlock for Sting, and you know, so on and so forth. One thing I noticed was submissions. We saw every time they would do a submission, the referee would get down and count to 10, and if he counted to 10, you win the match. So nobody's giving up. It's a count to 10 for some reason on this video game. But then, of course, pins are just a 1, 2, 3 like normal.
Right.
So that was just a little different. Never seen that. One thing also is every time you did your signature move, the wrestler would pop up on a little picture-in-picture screen, and like Sting, when he put the Scorpion Deathlock in, you would see him in a little video off to the corner going, woo, you know, doing like his signature phrases and stuff. There was actual minimal talking in the game, which was pretty interesting to see in 1994 on a Super Nintendo game. When you go to the player select, they all say their signature sayings also. So that was kind of cool. The character select screen, it looked more of real pictures of the wrestlers as opposed to
a video game sprite
or a cartoony look. So the appearance of the game looked really, really good. But that's where the fun ends, because it appears that the actual gameplay was pretty frustrating and hard to complete maneuvers. Because of the way they had the ring set up, it was hard to line up your wrestler to do moves. So it sounds like the game was kind of frustrating to play. You also had your singles match, your tag team match, an 8-man singles tournament, tag team tournament. You also had the ultimate challenge where you faced every wrestler on the game. So, I mean, like I said, the game really looks good for its time, but it sounds like the gameplay is probably the downfall of the game and why the game wasn't as popular. Because I remember seeing this on the shelf, but I never played it. So it was just one of those things that we really didn't get into WCW until they started blowing up with the NWO and everything. We didn't really pay much mind to the WCW as kids. So, sorry. It is what it is. We just didn't. But yeah, it was just interesting to see Stunning Steve Austin missing from this roster. Because I've been kind of going back and watching some WCW lately around the 1993 time. I was watching some Saturday Night, WCW Saturday Night, and they really showcased Stunning Steve Austin a lot. So for him not to be in this game, and this released in November of 94, makes me wonder if they just stopped showing him as much. Because I know Steve Austin was in WCW till 1995.
When did Steve Austin show up?
When did he show up in WCW?
Yeah, well, you've been watching it, so...
Well, he was already there when I started watching it. I just started it from 1993.
Well, you got to realize, these games are in development for a long time back then.
This is true.
It's very possible that they made this game before he started becoming more popular.
I suppose this is very possible, but... Turns out he showed up in WCW in 1991, so you want to, you know.
I still stand by what I'm
saying. Game came out in 94.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Anyhow, so regardless
of... Was he a main eventer in 91 where he would be on a video game?
He was challenging for the television title. Like I said, Flying Brian Pillman was his tag team partner until he turned on him. So, let's put it this way. I haven't seen Wyndham at all on my time of watching WCW in 93 at the moment. I don't know if he's hurt. Don't know where he's been. But I haven't seen Wyndham at all, but I've seen tons of Steve Austin. But regardless, the rest of these guys have been featured very heavily. I mean, they've got the natural Dustin Rhodes on here. Which is the current, as of the time I'm watching, is the United States champion. Vader's the world champion. Ravishing Rick Rude's the other world champion, which was a weird time in WCW because they had the big gold belt and they also had the WCW world title. So, yeah, these guys have been highlighted heavily. Now, the two guys that wasn't highlighted at all is the Steiner brothers, who were in the WWF at the time of which I'm watching. But they squeezed the Steiner brothers in this game, so I just kind of want to point that out.
I mean,
just trying to debunk your theory here.
Really? Yeah.
Now Ron Simmons, I haven't seen on my show as of right now, and maybe he's hurt. But Ron Simmons isn't there. But everybody else, like Simmons and Wyndham, I haven't seen so far. And then the Steiner brothers I know are in WWF at the time of where I'm watching. But the rest of these guys, yeah, they're pretty highlighted. They keep showing Johnny B. Badd, which obviously becomes Mark Marrow in WWF eventually. So, Ricky Steamboat has been highlighted a lot, but he keeps getting screwed over. He had a world title match against Vader, but of course, outside interference, Sid Vicious. Oh, Sid Vicious isn't in the game. That's surprising.
So let's,
Sid Vicious
let's
wasn't
just
in the game.
Let's just point out how right I am. So I'm looking here. Steiner Brothers were in WCW from 1988 to 1992. And they didn't show back up into WCW until 1996.
Oh, wow.
So
they...
My theory...
They released a game with the Steiner Brothers in 94 when they were still contracted with the WWF?
Yep, they were in the WWF until 94. 92 to 94. So, my theory of maybe Stunning Steve Austin didn't get popular, because if they left in 92, that suggests that all these guys were probably 91, 92 era guys. So, maybe Ron Simmons was there, but you're not seeing him because he wasn't wrestling at the time. I could look up the other ones, but the Steiner brothers left in 92. So that's what I think. This is before the Hollywood Blondes, I believe. Like I said, back then it took a long time for... Games were in development for a long time.
Interesting. I think it's just interesting to me... Because in November of 94, the Steiner brothers would have been well into their WWF run. So to have them put in this video game...
Can you imagine how hard it is, especially with everything they did with this?
Yeah, I know.
How hard it would be to just take them out?
I stand by my comments. It's pretty freaking crazy.
As long as you realize that I'm right.
Okay, well...
That explains... You're thinking... Well, this should be current. This should be new. But you're not realizing how long it takes to develop a game and create a game and make all these characters. That's why you don't have Stunning Steve Austin. He wasn't popular or a big hit at the time that they were developing.
All right. Fair enough. I'm wrong. I just find that very funny that they released a game with the Steiner brothers while they were currently with the WWF. That's pretty crazy.
Well, so they probably signed a contract for this game before they signed a contract for WWF, and they were already obligated to do it.
Huh. Okay, well, it's interesting. Okay, so let's go ahead, and do you have any more to say about this game?
It looked pretty. It was this is like a beautiful woman that you find out is really dumb. That's how I describe this game.
Okay.
Very good looks. Looks great, but then she opens her mouth.
Wow.
I'm not saying every pretty woman is dumb. Let me just reiterate that. I'm saying this game is like a beautiful woman who you find out doesn't have much of a personality.
Wow. We're going to shut this down before you bury yourself anymore. Okay, so before we move on to the rest of the coverage, we would like to celebrate ourselves for 50 episodes and for 1 year of the podcast.
Yay!
We're awesome.
We are awesome.
So,
you know, and the best part is, this podcast is being released exactly on June 19th, which is a exact year of when our first podcast came out.
And we planned it that way.
We sure did.
Sure did. So yeah, this will be 1 year of podcasting about wrestling. And We've made it. It's kind of perfect because we made it through 10 years of WrestleMania on the 50th episode and after the one-year anniversary. So it's kind of a perfect time to have that anniversary.
Right? Yeah, so what are your thoughts? You know, I believe when I first brought this idea up to you, you weren't super thrilled about the idea. So what are your thoughts after a year of podcasting?
Well, when you first brought it up, I thought it'd be a waste of my time, and I thought it would definitely lower my status in society. And a year later, I feel it did exactly that. But I'm having more fun than I expected.
I'm not sure if that's a ringing endorsement or a bit of an insult. I don't know. You keep telling me that your friends at work constantly talk to you about the Rage and Blaze show.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it's like, hey, yay, Rage and Blaze show, or T-T-He-He-He-He, Rage and Blaze show. So
teenage daughters don't count.
So it is one thing that, like I said, has probably lowered my status in society. But I enjoy doing it, and I really enjoy watching old wrestling footage, and it gives us a chance to hang out.
I mean, I'm loving it. It's like McDonald's for me, you know. I'm loving it.
Wow.
But, yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with it. I never cared much for my status anyways, and honestly, I get mostly praise except for giggling teenage daughters.
That's not a giggling teenage daughter. We are actually doing our 50th podcast right next to the ocean, and those are dolphins out there. We're doing this show on the beach.
Well, it's not just your daughters that giggle about my podcasting. So, you know, I also have a teenage daughter who is, a giggler. It's okay. She didn't have much for us to begin with.
Okay.
Once you become 13, you stop having any respect for your elders.
This is true. So, all right. So, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. 50 years.
50 years? Holy shit, this has been a long year.
50 episodes. 1 year, 50 episodes.
All right.
Did you think we'd get to 50?
No, I thought we would have gave up a long time ago. I thought my wife would have shut this shit down a lot sooner. The most impressive thing about this past year is that we have been able to maintain doing this weekly for a weekly show, and that I'm still married. It's wait. I better not tell her she has a choice. She could have shut this shit down a long time ago. But I think it's been fun. So, without further ado, let's start episode number 50 and move on to hopefully another 50 more.
I'm hoping much more than that.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on to our part two coverage of WrestleMania 10. Okay, so the first match we have for our Part 2 coverage is a WWF Tag Team Championship match between Men on a Mission, which is Mabel and Mo with Oscar in their corner, versus the Quebecers, Jacques and Pierre. And they have Johnny Polo, a.k.a. Raven, in their corner. This match was just there. It wasn't horrible. It wasn't great. It was just there.
It's not great.
I gave it 2.5 rappers. They do the whole.
It had a weird end to it as well.
Yeah,
it was a count out for title match.
So no belts change hand, but yet Men on a Mission were holding the belts up like they had won it.
Right.
Just very weird. It just wasn't a great... Just wasn't great.
Yeah, I'm going to go with, I think 1.5 Moose Jaws.
Say what?
What?
Moose Jaws. You know, what? The Quebecers, Canada.
Wow.
A. You don't know what I'm talking about?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so, yeah, let's just move on.
Cut off.
Okay, so the next match on our podcast is for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship. It is Yokozuna versus Lex Luger. And we have a special guest referee, and it's the returning Mr. Perfect. This match was kind of dull for the most part.
Boring as shit is, I believe, the technical term.
The best part of this match is how it ended, just the controversy, I think, on how it ended and the way they set that all up. Because last time we'd seen Mr. Perfect, he was a face. At the end of this match, I think it's obvious he is now a heel again. But this match was just one of those... it was like a 15-minute long submission hold. That's the majority of what happened in this match was Yokozuna grabbing Lex Luger by the shoulder blades, I guess, or...
Finger pinch of doom!
So, yeah, there just wasn't a lot going on in this match. There wasn't a lot of wrestling going on. Submissions can be fun to a degree, but this was just...
submission artist.
Yeah, this was just overkill. This was just... These two did not put on a good match, really, at all. I'm going to give it 2 pinches to the shoulder.
Yeah, this was a really boring match. It was, I mean, the most exciting things that happened is a belly-to-belly slam that Yokozuna puts on Lex Luger, and then Lex Luger does do a body slam when he finally starts attacking Lex or Yokozuna, and but it was way too much of, and it wasn't just that it was mostly submissions; they were boring submissions. Literally, Yokozuna just grabbed him by the shoulders, just pinched his shoulders, sometimes one-handed, sometimes two-handed. So it was just a lot of that. So this giant of a man, Lex Luger, cannot handle some shoulder pinches from Yokozuna. It was just boring. Boring-ass match. But like you mentioned, the ending had a little bit of excitement. So we get Jim Cornette coming to the ring, and Lex Luger beats the shit out of him. And I believe this was after the body slam. I think that's what finally took him down, right? No, it was the shoulder. He did his flying forearm. And he beat up Jim Cornette, knocked him down into the ring, and then Mr. Fuji tried to come in. Lex Luger beat him up too, and then he goes for the pin, and Mr. Perfect's like, "Cornette, you need to get out of that ring." Completely ignores that pin.
Then he goes to Mr. Fuji.
Then he goes to Mr. Fuji. He's like, "Hey, you can't be in here. You need to go." And then Lex Luger gets upset because both times he refuses to do the pin. And then he pushes Mr. Perfect. And, you know, Rage, you can't push the referee.
Uh-huh.
You cannot do it. So, rightfully, Lex Luger got disqualified for putting his hands on the referee.
Yeah, and I'd like to argue that the most excitement in this match was when they went to the backstage area and started arguing.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, so Lex Luger and Mr. Perfect are yelling at each other in the backstage area. This just was a dull match, but I think it was an easy match because maybe, just kind of theorizing here, maybe because Yoko has to do a second match, and maybe it had been hard for him to do two full-fledged matches.
I'm just hoping him versus Brett is a hell of a lot better. But, yeah, so I'm going to give this, I think, two pitches of doom.
Fair enough. Okay, so the next match is not much of a match at all, but it sets up where Howard Finkel introduces Harvey Whippleman. Harvey Whippleman gets a little cocky with Howard Finkel, rips his suit, and then the Fink pushes Harvey Whippleman down. So then Atom Bomb comes out to defend Harvey Whippleman, and before he could lay his hands on the Fink, Earthquake comes out, hits him from behind, does an Earthquake splash, and this match is over. I don't even know how to grade this, because there's nothing bad about it, but it just happened so fast.
It was a squash match.
It was a squash match, but I'll probably give it maybe 2.5 Hair Club for Men.
Yeah, there's not much to say about this. I'd like to give more description, but literally it was...
Earthquake
beat him up, lands on him, puts his nuts in his face. I'm going to give this 1.5 gourds.
1.5 gourds?
Yeah, you know, squashes. They're in the gourd family.
Oh my gosh. It's a thinker, people. It's a thinker.
Not my fault you got to think about it.
Okay, so before the next match, we have an interview with Yokozuna, Mr. Fuji, and James E. Cornette. And mainly, this was all James E. Cornette talking. Talking about the title match and how they both parties agreed on the special guest referee before the match began. How he called it right down the middle, and it's a good thing he called it right down the middle. They also mentioned Bret Hart's knee issue from... that was visible during the first match with Owen Hart, and talking about how he's not going to be prepared for Yokozuna. But then we get the next match of the night.
I just wanted to also bring up the fact that Yokozuna, it has a little tear in his eye.
Yeah, that was sweat. Okay, he won the match, so what's the tier for? Just the career of Lex Luger, how he never reaches this heights ever again?
Yokozuna is a very sensitive man.
I didn't know you could play piano like that. That's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very skilled.
So the next match is Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon to... unify the Intercontinental Championship. You have Shawn that kind of left the company but never lost the title, comes back carrying his title, saying he's still champ. Got Razor Ramon claiming, well, obviously he is the Intercontinental Champion because he won a Battle Royal to win the vacated Intercontinental Championship. So now the only way to solve this issue is to have our first WWF ladder match. Might be the first ladder match ever. I'm not sure if there was ever ladder matches outside of WWF. I'd have to do that research. But this was definitely the first one in the WWF. This is just pure classic. This is why we watch wrestling. This is why he is considered Mr. WrestleMania. He steals the freaking show. This match is amazing. I don't know where to begin on this match. The things he does with this ladder, the moves he does, or the full frontal ass shot that he ends up having, and then he still does an elbow drop with his ass hanging out. This match has everything. This is just a phenomenal, phenomenal match, and I give it 5 out of 5 HBK asses.
This was a fantastic This was a fantastic match. Absolutely fantastic. Both these two was amazing. There's a point where Shawn Michaels throws Razor Ramon outside the ring, and he lands on concrete. I thought he was actually injured after that.
Yeah, it looked like he might have hurt his elbow, but who knows?
I am a little confused why they kicked Diesel out, because this is a no disqualification match, so there's no reason that the ref should have thrown Diesel out of the match. But, well, Diesel attacks Razor Ramon, which is very sad if you know the future of these two.
Yes, brothers beating up brothers.
Yeah. But then the referee kicks him out. Of course, Shawn Michaels had some fantastic overselling. He lands on his nuts. Well, he gets pushed off the ladder and he lands on the ropes. Yeah, it was just so good. And then, like you mentioned, the elbow drop off the top. Razor Ramon pulling down those tights and Shawn Michaels giving absolutely no fucks. And he just elbow drop off the top. Ass showing. Fantastic.
It was hard to finish this match because I had to pause it and go get my wife a towel. It was insane. It was ridiculous.
Well, it is Shawn Michaels in his prime.
Jeez.
Full booty. I'm giving this 5 ass elbow drops as well.
I'm surprised this match met the Peacock standard and practices, to be honest with you.
Yeah, right?
Right?
I'm surprised it wasn't blurred.
Yeah, it wasn't a blurred. Blurred ass. It was nothing. That was it was full just ass. A full freaking ass shown. It was crazy.
The people that were editing these pay-per-views was probably women. They're like, no, we're keeping that. We're keeping that. Or they're gay. You never know.
Who knows? It just... I guess it just... It's shocking to see that there was no blur. No nothing.
No blur at
they're
all.
Just they're flat out yeah, full just frontal full, ass.
Well, that wasn't full frontal. Full, the ass is on the back.
Full back ass.
Full rear. Full rear.
Anyhow, yeah. I gave this a 5. What do you give this?
I just said 5.
A 5?
Yeah.
This was an amazing match. I'll tell you what. This
is one of the best matches we've seen.
Period. This was and fantastic. All of the big
and I
reviews.
Also checked, by the way, this you're right. This is the this is the first ladder match in WWE. But it is not the first one. According to this, the first ever ladder match was between Dan Crawford and Tor Kamada in 1972.
What?
Stampede Wrestling organization out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Really?
Where the object to be grabbed was a wad of money.
Okay. That's so interesting fact to know that there was a ladder match that long ago before this. I'm surprised it didn't catch on. I mean, you've had 10 years of WrestleManias here. A little surprised it hadn't caught on sooner.
I don't know. I mean... It might be just because of how wrestling was back then. You know, you had these steroided guys. Maybe they didn't want to climb a ladder. Maybe that just wasn't in their forte. You got two very fit, athletic guys with Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon, so they're able to pull it off.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be just as simple as that. I don't know. Maybe they didn't know about the ladder match.
Very possible. All right. Let's keep it going. Okay, so we are at our main event of the night. It is Yokozuna versus Bret the Hitman Hart for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship. And already this match was 10 times better than the Lex Luger match earlier in the night. I also like to point out the special guest referee that was announced by Burt Reynolds was none other than Rowdy Piper.
Indeed.
Yeah, so this match definitely had a lot more going for it. It didn't have the whole grabbing the shoulder and squeezing for 10 minutes.
No pinch of doom!
This was a legit, actual good match. It just had a weird ending, though. But the match itself was good.
There was a really cool moment where Bret Hart jumps off the top rope and Yokozuna catches him and then does a belly-to-belly on him. And that was, it was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, so there was some good stuff in this match. Like I said, the finish was, it appeared that Yokozuna was going to do his bonsai drop on Bret Hart. Bret Hart rolled out of the way, but instead of Yoko doing the bonsai and just landing on his butt, he literally falls off the top rope.
Yeah.
And just falls on his back, and it was almost like a turtle. He just couldn't get up, yeah. And Bret Hart pinned him, and it was 1-2-3, and that was the end of the match. It was like, there was no finish move, there was no, it was just kind of an odd ending. And then at the end of the match, after the match is over, you had all the faces in the company come out and celebrate with Bret, almost like America just won the war. And then you had Owen Hart come out but not get in the ring, almost like we want to keep the fact that he's a heel, but he came out there to, you know, kind of support his brother. But almost like he almost had this distinction that he was kind of given this face like, I beat you, and now you're the champion, but I beat you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I was actually surprised, because I fully believed that Owen Hart was going to interfere in this match. Like, I thought for sure that Owen Hart would try to screw Bret, instead of when Bret screws Bret. I thought Owen Hart was going to try to screw Bret.
Yeah, but it didn't happen. Like I said, this is it's a pretty good match. I'd have to give this, I'd say 4 turtles falling on their shell.
Yeah, it was decent. I don't know if it's as good. Head and Shoulders better than Lex Luger versus Yokozuna. There's no compare. There's no fingers of doom. Finger pinch. I mean, it was at least a decent match. I'm not sure I'm going 4. I'm gonna go 3.5. I mean, it's not bad. It's not bad. But I'm gonna go 3.5. Am I not turtle enough for the Turtle Club?
Okay. All right. So that's gonna do it for WrestleMania 10. I think this one's had some ups and downs. It's had some really bad moments.
It's had a lot of downs,
and it had a couple really good moments. So this is a very inconsistent WrestleMania, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it has probably one of the best matches we've watched so far.
You know, and that's going to elevate it, but
there's also some really bad ones.
There's some really bad ones in this match, or in this show, and we'll talk about that.
One of them was a championship match.
And yes, it was. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about what was good, what was bad, and
everything in between.
Sure.
Favorite match of the night.
Okay, so best match of the night. I think this is a no-brainer. This was not only one of the best matches of the night, this is probably one of the best matches we've seen since starting this podcast. And that was Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon in the first televised ladder match, which I did some research there. Turns out Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart had a ladder match before this in WWF in 1992, but the match never aired on television. So technically this is the second WWF ladder match, but the first one never aired.
If it doesn't air, it doesn't count.
Fair enough.
That's practically practice.
Okay, well, apparently the first one was supposed to air on an episode of WWF Wrestling Challenge in 1992, but for whatever reason,
they had a really good practice challenge.
Never aired. And that match was between Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you're right. It's a no-brainer. It's Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon. Hands down, best match of the night. Possibly one of the best matches we've seen. I mean, it's right up there with Macho Man versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I mean, it's up there. It's one of the best.
Definitely. I really enjoyed this match. This is why we watch wrestling, for matches like this. This was amazing.
Right.
Worst match of the night.
Okay, so worst match of the night. You could almost pick a few different matches. But I ranked the Bam Bam and Luna Vachon match versus Doink and Dink a 2. But I also gave Yokozuna versus Lex Luger a 2. And I had to think about this because I had two matches ranked so low. But I'm going to have to give it to Yokozuna and Lex Luger, and I'll tell you why. The reason I'm giving this the worst match of the night is, at least with the Bam Bam and Luna Vachon match, it was meant to be a comedy match. I gave it that low because I just thought it was a waste of time. But it did what it was supposed to do, is make people laugh, whatever. It's not my cup of tea. But that Lex Luger match with Yokozuna was supposed to be a WWF World Heavyweight title match, and it was about as boring as watching paint dry. So it just wasn't a very good match. It was a waste of time. I kind of understand why they did what they did. I think it was to preserve Yokozuna. He is a big man. They didn't want to overdo him and have him do two matches. It's kind of surprising that Yoko wasn't given that early match first.
Right.
Because of him, his size. With Bret Hart, you would think conditioning-wise he could handle two matches. But he's the guy who opened the show and closed the show. So to me, it was kind of like you would think Yokozuna would have needed that extra time to preserve. But they put them towards the end of the show. I mean, there was Yokozuna, then there was Earthquake and Atom Bomb, which was like a super, super quick match. And then you had the Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon ladder match. And then you're back to Yokozuna again. So there was only two matches in between, and the one match literally was, what do you think, 20 seconds, 30 seconds?
It was really short.
So they didn't give him a lot of time in between, which is probably why they did the submissions that we're bitching about and complaining about. Yeah, so there was probably logic behind it, but it was just dull as a fan to watch.
I mean, it was just a very boring match. They should have just made it the second match.
Right. They should have had the match a lot sooner, if that was a concern. So, just a little surprised at some scheduling things here. But I'm giving that a 2 because it was supposed to be a world title match, which is supposed to be a big deal match. And it was just as dull as could be.
Yeah. So, the Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon match, that's why we watch wrestling. However, the rest of this pay-per-view is why we get made fun of for watching wrestling. And the headliner of that is that Yokozuna versus Lex Luger match. That is, I think, the most disappointing match of the night. I don't know if it's necessarily the worst match of the night, but considering these are two top stars right now, and it was really bad. And I mean, I'm sorry. I understand maybe you want to preserve Yokozuna, so that's why you do it. But you just wasted and disappointed a crap load of wrestling fans, I feel, with that match. And that's not forgivable. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not giving you a pass because you're trying to hold off. There's other ways you could have made it where Yokozuna had more of a break. Hell, I would have preferred if they would have screwed over Lex earlier in the match. Like, barely have a match. So you can focus on the main event. That would have been a better outcome than let's just have Yokozuna squeeze his... I mean, he's practically given him a massage in there the whole time. I mean, it just was not good. It's the worst match of the night. If not the worst match, it's the most disappointing.
I completely agree.
WrestleMania rankings.
Okay, so let's go ahead and rank these WrestleManias. I'm going to have to go, I don't know, I kind of thought this was a little inconsistent. This had actually two really, really classic matches in it. So I really feel like it needs elevated because of the Owen Hart, Bret Hart match and the Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon match. Even the Bret Hart versus Yoko match was pretty good, I thought. The rest of the show was kind of bad. So unfortunately, the rest of the show is going to kind of drag the rankings down a bit. I think I'm going to put this at number 4. So I've got WrestleMania 8 at number 1, WrestleMania 3 at number 2, WrestleMania 2 at number 3. I'm going to slide this right above WrestleMania 9. I'm going to put it at 4. And then WrestleMania 9's my 5th. Number 7's my 6th. 4 is my 7th. 6 is my 8th. 5 is my 9th. And number 10 would be WrestleMania 1 for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. This had really two really good matches. I wasn't nearly as impressed with Bret Hart versus Yokozuna, but it was still a lot better than... But it had a lot of bad matches. There was a lot of disappointment here. So I'm going to start with number 10, WrestleMania 1. Number 9, WrestleMania 4. Number 8, WrestleMania 6. Number 7, WrestleMania 9. Number 5... Or 6, WrestleMania 5. And then I think I'm going to put this above WrestleMania 5 at 5. So WrestleMania 10, then 4, WrestleMania 7, 3, WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, and my favorite so far is WrestleMania 8.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's where I'm going to go with that.
Okay, so that's going to do it for our WrestleMania 10 coverage. All we have left to do now is plug the pluggables.
All right, well, you can find me on the Facebook, the Instagram, and the YouTube on Dragon Blazer Productions. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Dragon Blazer Pro. And I've been kind of bugging and bugging, I know. But we would like those 5 stars. And those reviews. 5 stars and reviews. If you got yourself an iPhone, get on there and give us a review and give us 5 stars. Tell us what you think. And then, if that's not enough, we also have a phone number. You can leave us a voicemail and we'll put it on the show. And that number is 567-443-0663. Give that a call. Tell us what you think. Ask us a question. Do something. I don't care. Anything!
Okay, so we've got The Rage and Blaze Show on Facebook. We got at The Rage and Blaze Show on Instagram. And at Ricky Rayberg on Twitter is how you can get a hold of us. Or get a hold of me. And, let us know what you think. Tell us if you thought this was kind of a lackluster WrestleMania with a couple really, really good matches. We're just curious what you think about it. This has been 10 WrestleManias we have covered now.
Our 50th show.
Our 50th show. One year since we've started this podcast. And look how much we've grown. We're practically famous now. I mean, we walk up on the street and people say, hey, do you know where this building is? And we're like, see, they remembered us. They recognize us. This is amazing. They wouldn't have asked a stranger. They recognize us. That's why they asked, right? Sure. They asked for directions on the street.
Sure. I think it's we're non-threatening, but sure, yeah, let's go with that.
Yeah, so it's just hard to be famous sometimes, but you know, this show hasn't gone to our heads at all. The
struggle is real.
The struggle is real, you know, celebrityism.
Yeah.
We understand.
Because, you know, people know what we look like.
Of course. All they have to do is go on the Facebooks and the Instagrams and the Twitters.
Did you just plural those?
Hell no.
Yes, you did. You did it!
I didn't do it.
Yes, you did.
Okay, so this has been the Rage and Blaze Show. I'm Rage.
And I'm Blaze, and Rage did it!
And good night from Rage's Pit, and I didn't.
And here is your winners, and still podcast tag team champions of the world,
the Rage and Blaze Show.
Thank you for listening.